one we're going to do now. Yeah, that's the one. You have it as well, right?
Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Honorable members, can we start with our meeting? Honorable members, let's start with our meeting. As I've indicated before, that the next presentation will be on the strengthening of the relative rights of people working on the land, which is known as the 50-50. Then can I hand over this to the DG to lead us with the presentation. Over to you, DG.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. Indeed, we will make the presentation on strengthening of relative rights. We have circulated then the framework that we are using because we really want to use the work we've been doing so far then to develop it into a much more detailed policy document, just like we did with the one household, one hectare. So we're going to talk to that framework and the key elements of that policy framework, and we then will then present the progress that we have made so far in implementing the Strengthening of Relative Rights Program, or the 50-50. So I'll hand over to Acting DDG Zulu.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, DG, and the colleagues. I'm going also to talk to the key elements of the policy framework on the 50-50. Like the Acting DG have said, we are busy as a department to drafting the final the whole policy, but for implementation, the minister signed this framework for us to proceed with the implementation of the program as announced. Although this is not in the presentation, but the program is located under our strategic objective 5.1. which talks to the promotion of land acquisition, promoting of equitable land redistribution and agricultural development by acquiring hectares of strategically located land. That is where the program is located, and also the indicators and targets that are sitting under that particular strategic objective. Then in terms of the background, in terms of the presentation outline, I will talk to the background on the program, the core purpose of the policy, the guiding framework, the guiding policy framework, the pilots that we have, etc. Then in terms of the background, as you all know, what we are trying to do in this particular presentation is to summarize the policy imperatives, the lessons we have learned, and the expected outcomes. I will also further highlight the status update on and the delivery on the hectares and the budgets that we have spent under the program since we have started the pilots and up to date, and the status of anticipated impact. The policy on 50-50 was first announced in 2014. And the program initiatives aims at ensuring that farm workers benefit from owning shares in the agricultural enterprises on farms on which they work, as well as providing them with security of tenure. It is also a pursuant of the objectives of the land tenure security for commercial farming areas signed in 2013, the Extension of Security Tenure Act 62 of 1997, and its 2015 amendment bill currently in Parliament, as well as various international agreements government has assented to. The core purpose of this policy framework is to introduce measures to address land hunger, extreme land concentration, associated poverty and inequality by fostering asset and enterprise equity that introduce fundamental changes to land relations and factors of production. To this end, the 50-50 policy program aims to empower farm workers while at the same time recognizing their contributions to the development of farms on which they work and the agricultural sector in general. Provides for the government to acquire a stake in the farming enterprise on behalf of the workers and to purchase the land in order to provide tenure security for the farm workers. Remember the difference between the two, the former share equity schemes, which we did not implement, they did not have the element of land purchase. So this particular program talks to the key two elements, the equity for on behalf of the farm workers, and also the state buys the land to provide for the security of tenure for the farm workers. Also improve socio-economic conditions of people living and working on farms. The program goes further than agricultural production in having a stake, and also look at the post-transfer processes, which now focuses on the socio-economic conditions of the persons or people living and working on those particular farms. The guiding frameworks, this policy is premised on these founding documents, foundational documents of our democracy, the Freedom Charter, that, as you will know, the Constitution, especially Section 25 of 26 and 27, 36 of the Constitution, especially the talks to access to land and the construction and development program, the national development, especially your chapter 6 of the national development plan. These are the key policy framework where this particular policy is premised on in the key elements of this particular policy. Firstly, as I've said, it was adopted in June 2016, and it also offers an analytical framework and guidance on strategic trust, which has guided the pilot implementation. So this particular framework that we have developed and signed off by the minister, it gives us direction in terms of how we implement the pilots. And as I've said, and the acting DG have said, we are finalizing the whole policy now going forward. We should be finalized this financial year. It seeks to move from a single owner system to a collective ownership one, and it introduces fundamental change to relations to factors of production in its transformational processes. The key elements of this particular policy talks to the means of production, which are key. How do we address those particular issues as we implement this for the benefit of our farm workers and people living on these particular commercial farms? That talks to the issue of land, the labor, the capital, and business. In terms of the land, the land will be owned by government, either fully or partially. That is either fully or partially nationalized. Where land is owned by government, the title deed is registered in the name of the state. Where the title deed is shared between government and the previous sole owner, a new dynamic emerges. A new form of title deed should be created, which is this office is looking at that. Currently, what is happening in the pilots, the land currently is owned by the state and 100% owned by the state and leased by NewCo. I will talk to that as we go forward. But there are two particular proposals on the policy framework where the land is owned by government, which the title deed will be 100% owned in the name of the state and leased out to the new company that will be jointly owned by the previous owner and the farm workers. And there is also a proposal of a share ownership, a co-ownership of that particular piece of land in terms of the bullet number 3. Where government owns land, even a portion, farm workers will be given the land use rights certificates, which they will use to enter into the new business arrangements with the previous farm owner. As I've alluded to, this business arrangement gives birth to a new company, the NewCo, jointly owned by all parties, plus our, not necessarily, we have said NEF, because currently we've got an agreement with National Empowerment Fund, but we want to expand the scope with an implementing agent that will be helping the department in terms of expertise, deal structuring, etc., in terms of this particular program. In terms of labor, the framework suggests that material facts of each investment case should first be established before taking any critical step. In other words, it's not one size fits all. It depends on what commodity in that particular space, whether the farmers, the farm workers are farm workers and also they are farm dwellers. Because in some instances you find that the labor or farm workers that are on a particular farm, most of them they are working and residing on the farm. Some they are not necessarily working anymore, but they are residing on a particular piece of farm. It is known fact that in unfettered capitalist market system like South Africa, workers are generally exploited. So we take into consideration in the implementation of the program that they are not at the same level, the farm owner and the farm workers. They are not on the same level. What remains unknown are the severities in terms of exploitation. Some of them, they've been there, they've been exploited. Obviously, we need to take into consideration that relationship as we implement the program so that they now realize that they are in the same level as the former landowner. They are co-business partners rather than the previous farm owner remains the boss, etc. Now they are business partners in this particular relationship in terms of the implementation of the program. Therefore, before a decision on whether farmers will continue to provide labor to the new co will determine by the prevailing conditions of each case, as I've alluded to. The capital, in terms of the 50-50 program model, a joint venture capital sponsored by government on behalf of the farm workers with the previous farm owner. So in other words, the government as a department, as we implement the program, capital injection in terms of the joint venture, the state funds that particular transaction. The previous farm owner brings the business entrepreneurial skills, know-how and markets, and the farm workers bring their labor, raw skills, and land use rights certificate to enter into a particular transaction. But the, in terms of capital, as well, the previous farm owner will go 50-50 in terms of the contribution into the business based on the business plan or the due diligence and assessment that will be done by our development implementing agent, like the NEF, as I've alluded to. Therefore, most of the resources accrued from the business should go into the training and development of farm workers in terms of directorship, management, and operations. We are emphasizing that any money that is generated on the business or accrued in the business, they must prioritize in the transaction, the training and development of the farm workers, so that we bring them up, as I've said. They are not, most of the farmers have been, farm workers have been exploited. Obviously, they've been working for this farmer for years. Now, to co-own the business is a struggle. We need to train them, to put them up, so that we identify those who can be at the higher level in terms of directorship going forward, and also in the management of different operations in the company. It's also evident that the first 5 years of the new co will be extremely testing. So we are saying, as we start the program and pilot, obviously in the first 5 years of the implementation, the first year, second year going forward, it will be very testing, because we are trying to empower the farm workers to be at the same level with their former employer of their former boss in terms of because most of them, you find that they are illiterate, and we have to capacitate them and put them in power. The business, as I've said, there will be a new co. The state of the current company has to be critically analyzed. Before we enter into any transaction, the NEF, as we have said, they must analyze the particular business, look at the viability, the economic viability of that particular. There is a criteria that we have developed that look at the financial statements, the due diligence, the audited financial statements, and look at the threats, the risk, and opportunities that are there in that particular business, so that they can give the department an informed decision whether to enter into that particular space. Each business is unique, as we have said, and we are treating each one of them differently in terms of, therefore, one-size-fits-all approach will not suffice. We are looking at each and every proposal as it comes, differently from one another. As I've said, the NewCo should be established as a new company that will run the business, a joint company with the board of directors from both the farm workers, the department, the farm workers, the former land owner, and our development implementing agent, which will be part of it in terms of the 50-50 model. Currently, how we're implementing it in terms of the business ownership, you have your 45% ownership by the farm workers, which can go up to 55%, and then you've got your 50% from the former land owner, and we have agreed to say our development implementing agent, like your NEF, will hold the 5%, so that there's stability in terms of the board. So they must also sit in the board to oversee the transactions on behalf of the state, so that they can look after the interest of the farm workers. The factors of production, as I've said, in terms of this policy, we as a department, we look at all the factors of production, including the equipment that is necessary for the business, and also the machinery, and we also appoint the transactional advisor. And after the transfer of the property to the state, and all the documents have been the agreements have been signed by all parties, the new core has been established, we therefore proceed with the social facilitation and also look at the post-settlement, post-transaction support, which will now look at the social well-being of the farm workers or farm dwellers on that particular property. What we have illustrated in the policy is that what we know in each case of all of these farms is that the price of the land which the state will own currently in terms of the current proposal, and which we have evaluated through the Office of the Valuer General. And therefore, the NewCo is expected to pay rental to the state at 2% of the price of the land as determined by the Office of the Valuer General, which is very key in terms of the this particular policy. And therefore, only 2% rental shall be charged based on the price and state of the land as reflected in the valuation outcome by the Office of the Valuer General. The intended policy outcomes are to secure the land rights and residential tenure of the farm workers, empower people working the land to acquire majority equity holdings in farming enterprises, and bring about economic transformation of the agricultural sector, enable beneficiaries to sell labor power across the fence without fear of eviction. And I think our view is that as if we implement this program, it's going to provide for security of tenure, will also assist the farm workers to participate in the agricultural value chain and also in the production in that particular land and income. And thirdly, we are saying it will help us to cap evictions in most of the farms, because now the farm workers will be looked after and be empowered. Strengthen farm workers' bargaining power in advancing worker rights and improving his or her conditions of living, as I've alluded to. Address socioeconomic livelihood challenges faced by farm dwellers and labor tenants. As I've said, there is post-transactional support that we provide through the agent that we have contracted, the NEF, which now looks at, after this whole transaction in terms of the business, now they look at the socio-economic livelihood or conditions of the persons or challenges that they have as farm dwellers and labor tenants in terms of their own social well-being. Chairperson, the next slide, they talk to the delivery on the program to date. As I've said, the policy was announced at the stage of the nation address by the president, who called for a pilot of 50 projects by 2019, from which to date we have learned lessons, because we started the pilots. I will give you the details in terms of how far we are. The progress to date is that we have signed the memorandum of understanding with the and the SLA with the National Empowerment Fund to get those external expertise to help us restructure to do the deep structuring, due diligences, and package these projects on our behalf. We have received approximately 91 project proposals from across the board, of which in the screening, 5 were declined, 86 proposals are at different stages of implementation as we speak now. 20 projects have been approved, of which 15 have been implemented and transferred. Of the 15 farms transferred, I'm not going to talk about the list, but they are in the provinces like you see your Eastern Cape, Free State, KZN, etc. That is the list in the next slide that talks to how many farm workers have benefited on this one and how many hectares that we have acquired and transferred to the name of the state at a cost of 325 million rand since we started the pilot. This is the next slide, just talk to one of the projects that we implemented, the 50-50 in KZN, which is doing very well. We did not put a lot of pictures, but we can provide the committee with the pictures of those that we have already implemented and the progress on each one of them. This is the list that I'm talking about, the delivery, the in terms of the numbers that I was speaking to, in terms of what has been transferred, the in terms of the previous slide. These are the names of all of those projects, the ones that are still that have been approved, which are still pursuing, which will be transferred in no time this financial year. Although in some of those that have been approved, there are still discussions in terms of the contracts, the agreements that we need to sign between the attorneys from our agent NEF, as well as the attorneys from those farmers, and also the farm workers, because our interest is on the farm workers more than anything else. This is the report on, as I've said, we do social facilitation. We don't just work on with the farm workers, but we do social facilitation so that we empower the farm workers so that they participate meaningfully into these transactions, because these are serious business transactions in the agricultural sector. So you can see in terms of the ticks and the minuses, we are still, this is the area that as a department we said with our branch, because this is driven by our branch REIT and NEF, coordinated by the branch Land Redistribution and Development. This is the area that for now, we still have concerns, because the movement is not that much, but we are working on it. We've got a plan now to deal with the social facilitation, so that by the time the transaction goes through, the workers, the farm workers and labor tenants, they are ready to participate meaningfully. They understand the ins and outs of this particular business so that it cannot fail. This slide just talks to the milestones in terms of the key performance areas across the program, in terms of what do we do until we get to a point where the land is transferred and also the transaction is closed, and the approval structures. I'm not going to bore the committee with that. But in terms of valuation of all of these transactions, the OVG does that. There is a committee that deals with the screening, which we call the Ministerial Technical Task Team, that is sitting shared by Mr. Mbongo from Ministry, that screens all these proposals and that are received and prioritize these proposals. We don't just accept any proposal, but it goes through a screening process, as you can see. And then after the evaluation has been completed by the OVG, then the NEF will start to conduct the due diligence, so that it can inform the ministerial the technical task team in terms of whether the department can enter into this particular transaction or what are the issues that needs to be dealt with. And then lastly, we will be the social facilitation, social economic and household profiling that begins to deal with the farm workers specifically to empower them, so that they only say empower with the landowners. The lessons learned from the pilots, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, there's still an issue of power relations between the farm workers and the farmer, and social facilitation, and we are saying for social facilitation should be prioritized and at the due diligence stage of the project cycle to manage these relations. We are saying as we do due diligence, it must go together concurrently with the social facilitation, because you know, changing the mindset of the farm workers, to change them to say now you are co-owners of a business, you are partners in this particular business, is a task, is not a once-off event. So we need to focus on that. The department also solicited institutional support to undertake due diligence, land and property valuations, as well as facilitating the merger and acquisitions of the SRR transactions. The need to conduct the due diligence and cost-benefit analysis of all SRR projects for the state to derive maximum value out of these investments. So that is what we have realized as well, to say that cost-benefit analysis in terms of the value, the maximum value for the state, to say if we have invested there, what is the value for money in terms of all of these transactions. The awareness creation, detailed explanation to the different stakeholders, we need to do that at an initial stage of the project to manage stakeholder expectations from SRR projects, because the expectations might be dangerous, some they might be helpful, but what we have realized during the pilots is that some of the farmers, they bring in their proposals with the thinking that they will eventually buy back those particular transactions. That is why I say awareness creation is necessary to all stakeholders who want to participate in this particular program. Additional capacity is required in the approval committees, as I've said, because this is a specialized field of which in the department we don't have that. The capacitation of farm workers' trust to participate in the board of the new companies, those are the things that we've realized during the pilots. The farm workers' trust need guidance on when and how much and when to draw dividends from the business enterprise. A dividend policy for the new company is to be developed as part of standard operating procedures for all our SRR projects. That is what we are working on now as we review the policy, the framework to develop a fully fledged policy on SRR, to look at these gaps that we have identified during these pilots. The acquisition of equity by farm workers, in conclusion, must be seen to be a fundamental game changer in the agricultural sector. It introduces co-management of the farm based on relative equity holdings and the capacity of each participant in production and management of the agricultural enterprise. This program initiative contributes towards government's efforts at revitalization and transformation of rural economy through the social and economic empowerment of farm workers and communities. As a consequence of this program, farm workers and farm dwellers will no longer have reasons to fear the capture of evictions, because land tenure will have been secured. Thank you, Honorable Chairman, and the members.
Thank you, Mr. Zulu, for the presentation. I think, DG, any additions on the presentation?
Not at the moment, Chair.
Honorable members, can we engage in the presentation? Honorable Walters, Honorable Fultane, for now. Honorable Stolle, you are welcome this committee meeting. Honorable Walters, can you kickstart? Honorable Semenya.
Chair, first of all, let me say that I think this is long overdue. I think the 50-50 policy, certainly in the beginning of this term, was subject to all kinds of populist language, and I think prone to all kinds of call it fear-mongering, that I think, and I think we certainly in the DA took the approach that while we don't like that, we actually want to see what the proposal is. And certainly the regional policy document was, well, I'm not suggesting we debate that now, but from our point of view, some profound concerns that we had with it. Now, what I'm seeing here is essentially a rollout of a couple of key concepts. I think some can argue that it's similar to the share equity schemes that we had in the past, with some concerns being taken on board in terms of livelihood, tenure security. Others will say, well, it's a totally different approach, and one can have that debate. But the way I understand this is essentially the department putting its toe in the water to test the concept and to learn from it. And I think, in my view, this must be an ongoing kind of report that we should be getting, because I think the lessons will change. What's being said here at the beginning of the introduction of the pilot project, the lessons that we're learning now and the lessons we're going to be learning 6 months from now, 1 year from now, I think it's going to shift. But if I can just also then say concerns that I certainly have is there's potential for confused objectives. Is this aimed at being a successful business model that works, that commercially works, that grows the economy, creates jobs, advanced land ownership, or is it about tenure security? Because while I don't think it's necessarily the two are mutually exclusive, I do think one has to be clear as to what the intent behind it is. Secondly, the issue of land ownership there, look, it's still hazy. You know, we're talking of land use certificates, we're talking of shares, we're talking of what exactly is the model. I think we all want land ownership to change, we want it to normalize, we want to address the legacy of the past, and I think there's potential in this. But to what extent is this state-owned, which means that the state then takes a role within a commercial venture, which means that, again, we have issues of moving beyond the capacity of the state. It's not the core business of the department to run a business. It's there to support a certain type of business, there to take a responsibility for a successful environment, but I see potential strategic drift there. Also, the issue of collective ownership and business decision. I think we all agree, and certainly one of the model of share equity that the DA supports, it's not a continuation of the same power relations. What we want is proper shareholders taking decisions together. Has the department actually sat down with business experts, people that are dealing with company law, people that deal with commercial enterprise? To what extent is there a reinvention of the wheel there when there's in fact lots of practices that the concept of a company with shareholding has been around for hundreds of years? There's a company law, there's rules within a company, there's things like annual reports, a regularity of interaction. There's I think a body of expertise there that I miss coming to the foyer, because it sounds like it's nearly like the department moving to a territory of trying to facilitate that where there's existing practice that can be looked at. Chair, there's also risk. How will risk be managed between a pre-existing farmer, state ownership, land use certificates? How does ultimately the operation of a business is about determining risk, making business decisions? I see a lot of clutter potentially there, and also who takes the risk at the end of the day, who decides to take that risk. I'm also concerned that not necessarily enough attention has gone into existing business models in land reform that the state isn't necessarily that involved in, where it did work, both in terms of land ownership. Now, I'm not talking about the share equity schemes where, you know, agribusiness is started and workers get shares in an agribusiness, but not into the land itself. I'm talking of land ownership itself was changed. In some cases, 100% ownership of beneficiaries, where livelihoods were impacted on in terms of worker or agreements in terms of what workers work for their own business. And at the same time, having a proper shareholding company environment where people get regularly empowered. I think we mentioned previously in this committee, I know a couple of years ago, Agri Dwala was an example of that. So I think we shouldn't just look at the pilots. We should also be looking at other models already in operation that's been successful, that's not the start of a process, but actually already up and running. Then, Chair, A couple of other concerns, and I'll continue to explore this as we get presentations in this regard. Discipline service versus ownership. How does that impact on labor law? How does that impact on contract law? One of the problems that we have with 10-year security is that labor contracts don't necessarily correspond with the residual rights on land in an existing, well, it's part of what we dealt with in ESTA. So what happens in a situation if somebody is shareholding, yet is not a presumably all the labor law there is in place and does not provide disciplined service? You know, there's to me a range of legal issues that could also be contradictory there. So I'm very concerned from what I see here is I see a lot of things that certainly around share equity and empowerment that one can support and want to see unfold. But I also see lots of clutter. It's as if it's a lot of ideas that's been thrown together and we're testing it, but we're not actually deciding this is what we want to achieve, this is our business model, it's based on the following good practice. And implement that. I think it will make it also easier for government to know where to align its resources, what to support. And Jen, a last comment. This is incidentally something that I think our doctor that's in charge of research, we've often spoken about. It's something I have a very distinct interest in. To what extent is it important to involve, for example, the Department of Small Business Development in this as well? There's two scenarios, broadly speaking, that you find in a land reform setting. The one is shareholding in an existing business. It's not quite a startup phase, but you actually sidestep the startup phase. You continue or potentially sidestep the startup phase and you continue with an existing business. Alternatively, you sit with an entirely new business that's actually in a startup phase. And that requires a certain approach, that requires a certain type of support. And if we miss that, you can actually end up throwing resources at a venture that hasn't found its feet yet, and which could explain a lot of the failures that we've had in the past in land reform. So we need to understand that business cycle. We need to understand that startup phase because it tells us what support we provide at what time. So Chair, there's actually a lot. I'm actually being short, surprisingly enough. But I think this, I really suggest these are all the kinds of issues that one needs to explore. I suggest that just to summarize, that we continuously get presentations in this regard. And I also suggest that we explore existing successful models and add that into the reporting that we can have a proper picture of what's going on. Thanks.
You have been too long. Honourable Filton, Honourable Mpapam.
I'll be really short. thank you, Chair. As much as I found the presentation caught up with it after it had already taken off, I would hope that my questions would still be relevant. Starting with the rental, which is going to be based on the evaluated price of the farm. Why is it not the rental is based on the output revenue, on the revenue that the enterprise generates, rather than fixing it on the valuation? Because valuation can fluctuate. I do understand, of course, that you're talking about a fixed amount of only 2%, but it is not unusual, especially when people are both have got an equal interest for our shareholders, because this gives the other person the edge, over the other one in terms of income. I don't know how the income is going to be shared, income that comes from the enterprise, but this would be an incentive for someone to make sure that the enterprise is a success. I've got a question on the, concern, not a question, on the security of tenure of the farm workers, given that we have seen some shortcomings in the 1997 Act and are currently busy trying to improve it in order to secure the tenure of the farm workers. what is their position here? Do they enter into a formal lease agreement to make sure that they will not, you know, at the drop of a hat, you know, be ejected from, evicted from the farm? Now, also fundamentally, what is the criteria for choosing the farms, you know, that benefit from this program? It's good to see that so many are already, you know, on production line, if you like, but one would like to know what criteria was used to select them. And why opt for a trust when we're already, you know, coming across as a department elsewhere, experiencing, you know, problems when it comes to the administration, you know, of trust, especially from the perspective of where the department has got to intervene. Why opt for a trust? And lastly, Chair, the policy on this, I'm not sure if we got it. I'm not saying we never got it. It could be that it's just that my memory of filing, you know, is letting me down. Do we have this policy with us? Has it ever been presented? I repeat, it's possible that it was, and that perhaps it's just me who is failing to recollect. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mbabama, then Honorable Chabeli, can you follow? Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just have two problems, or maybe questions, I should say, not problems. Two challenges with this, what we are studying here today. The first is I'm very wary always to have a top-down solution to people on the ground, because in my experience, it never works. And I'm just, I don't know, it's a question, but are we absolutely sure that we have workshopped this properly with the actual farmers themselves and the actual farm laborers on the ground? And I just want to take us back to a point where we, with previous initiatives, where we've wanted to, in fact, where we have bought farms for farm laborers, only to find that the farm laborers are not interested in the farm. They are interested in something else altogether. Maybe they're just interested in a small plot belonging to themselves, and that's it. So have we really gone to the farmers and the farm laborers themselves and found out if they would be willing to get into something like this? And across the country, because there are different types of farms. There are wine farms. So would the laborers be interested in partnering with farmers on a wine farm? Then there is a farm in the Free State, which is a maize farm. That's a different ballgame altogether. Then there are, you know, animal farms where you have livestock, et cetera, et cetera. So I think I'm really worried about the workshopping side of it. And sometimes, you know, ideas are very grand and they sound very well, and they make great academic studies and all of that. But when you actually try to implement it on the ground, you find that the people are not on the same page with you. That's my first question. Then my second question is about this land use rights certificate. I'm not really comfortable with this land use rights. Immediately I saw this, I thought of my grandparents' house in Mamelodi, the four-roomed house that my mother grew up in, where she had a 99-year lease on the property, and she never used it whatsoever. She could never take it to the bank or anything. So what is this land use certificate, right certificate? When I heard that it will go to the deeds office, I thought, great, you know, it's another name for a title deed. But is it exactly? What is a land use certificate? And are we not going back to something similar to the 99-year lease of the apartheid regime? Thank you.
I think all of my questions were taken, Chairperson. It would be nice if we get answers and then we can make follow-up questions. Still, I'm concerned about the policy. I don't think there is any policy. If there is, then it means I did not understand it. That's why I don't even remember anything about the policy. So I'll need to be reminded if there's a policy, and maybe I'll read it later. But will this thing? How will this thing work? We've got lots of programs, restitution, where people were given lands and to work. Some were going concerns, but that are now collapsed. And we know the reasons of the collapsing. It's not because people are mismanaging the land, but it's because the department is not applying its mind when doing the final transfers of land. We don't do an asset register before, and even just before the negotiations and after purchasing the land, is there a way where we look at, are the assets still as they were when we were still negotiating? Because then some of the things get stolen in the process, and we end up transferring shells. And then we blame people for being poor farmers when these guys have been working the land for so many years on the same farm that they are staying on. Now, what happens in instances when one of the restituted farms wants to be part of the 50-50? Let's say they've got somebody who wants to invest money in the project, on their farm. How will it work? Will it be allowed? Or, questions were asked again about what is the difference between this and sharecroppers, because sharecroppers had the rights to live on the land and work the land and share whatever they make with the landowners. Maybe if we get answers to the questions asked earlier, it may help us to make follow-up questions. Thanks, Chairperson.
I think you've been noting the questions, but just to check the monitoring part, because while we're implementing RECAP, there was a challenge with regards to monitoring. Strategic partners, the mentors and whatever, the policy was there, but the implementation was different. And there were lots of problems whereby beneficiaries were not involved. Either the strategic partner or the mentor is the one that is running with the project, leaving the beneficiaries behind. So do you have the capacity to monitor this 50-50?
Okay, thank you, Chair. Thank you, honorable members. I will start, and then Mungkosi will then add as well. In terms of the comments from Honorable Walters, I think a lot are comments that we can also take forward in looking at the program itself and in implementing the program, and we will do that. And I think your comment in terms of saying, is this essentially the department testing the concept? Indeed, that's why we're saying we had been piloting. So as we roll out, we are learning and adjusting as we go along in terms of the models of how we are choosing this. I think around the issues or the comments made by Honorable Walters in terms of the potential for confused objectives, are we wanting to create businesses, are we wanting to create a sustainable tenure model, I think that the essence of this program, even when it was in the previous state of how it looked, the policy, it was about tenure security. And it still is strengthening relative rights of people living and working on farms. It's still there, right? But the fundamental thing is it cannot only be about that. It also has to be about business engagement. Now, one of the issues is that many people living and working on farms are working on commercial enterprise or commercial farms, farms where a lot of agricultural enterprises are being conducted at the moment. So it's twofold. One, that we are beginning to see a shift then in that particular sector to make sure that workers form part of the business venture as well. So you do see that twofold objective that we are looking for. One, the 10-year security, but two, that they become part of the sharing of the profits that come from the land. And I think that is in line with radical economic transformation objectives as well. In terms of the land use certificates, I think Bonginkosi will deal much more in detail in terms of the land use certificates and the issues of shares, etc., in the company. In terms of the issues that you raise around the how will risk be managed and who takes the risk at the end of the day, remember that the model is such that the state owns the land, the underlying land. We're signing lease agreements and establishing a new co on top of the land in terms of operating a business jointly. So anybody operating a business jointly, it means the new shareholders in that company, which is the current landowner or current operating company, plus the beneficiaries or farm workers that are coming in, they will operate as a business enterprise. So if we're talking about risk sharing in terms of a business enterprise, they share it according to the equity that they will hold in that business. The benefit, and that's why Bonginkosi, when he was presenting, kept indicating the need then for strengthening the capacity for them to engage properly in those business enterprises so that they understand from day one the role that they play as a director, the role that they play as sitting on the board, and then their role distinguished then from just being a shareholder in that company. So most definitely, and obviously the state through ourselves, but also more specifically through the expertise that we have currently with the NEF that we are using at the moment, but we're exploring other such entities like the NEF to assist us, will help us then with that kind of work as well from a business perspective. We take note of the issue of paying attention then to current existing models that may be there, and have we looked at these. Perhaps also we just need to remember that when we started out these consultations, we did extensive consultation with the commercial agricultural sector, as well as your various commodity organizations, etc., in even developing what was the first one and having engagements on the first one and as we came into this one. So there's a lot that we looked at even around current models, for example, of agribusiness and how they were doing it. But we take note that there are many others out there, and we will also have a look at those models as well in terms of strengthening the work that we are doing at the moment. In terms of the issues, and then I think that talks to the issue of good practice, etc., that we will look at. And to the extent that we involve the Department of Small Business Development, I think in general the principle that we have adopted within the department is that because we have other components as well, like your rural enterprise and industry development, we do a lot of work with the Department of Small Business Development, especially when it comes to the issue of startup businesses and the support that we require, because the expertise sits with them. We also have been engaging extensively with CIFA, and in this case, like I'm saying, we have been engaging with the NEF, which then has that capacity around business development that the department does not have. And I think the acting DDG in indicating had said we didn't necessarily have full capacity within the state, and so we have been using that capacity that sits within the NEF to give us that business support. One of the things, though, that we are doing is making sure that we, within the department, as we move forward, are establishing then a team of people who are going to be professionals around the areas of economics, agricultural economics, etc., contract management, etc., and they will work then with small business, with people like IDC, NEF, and we're also looking at other entities to assist us in that regard. Honorable Sultani, in terms of the rental, I think this has been a thing that we've been debating for a while, even when we started. Originally, we were considering rental based on the profit or the turnover of that particular entity. But that also became a problem. The farmers or the entities themselves have been approaching us to say it's very difficult to base it on that. Because when you start out on day one, remember, we have to cover the property with a rental agreement, with a lease agreement. Now, when we start out, in terms of their projections, and that's when the ADDG referred to the fact that the first few years of running this joint business is not going to be easy for them themselves. And so in that consultation process, we then agreed on a set standard of 2%. As we progress, as that entity progresses as well, that may then change going down the line. But for now, the 2% standard, we've gone, had to go back to National Treasury because we were not necessarily wanting to go to the issues of profit, and we have gotten agreement then from National Treasury in terms of that. So that is the reason why we are settling for the issue of the valuation. In terms of the security of tenure of the farm workers, do they enter into a formal agreement? I think Acting DDG will also talk to that when he talks to the land use rights certificate, as well as in terms of the criteria for choosing the farms that we benefit, and as well as the trust. As far as the issue of the documentation, Chair, that we have submitted, we did submit this. Members would note that we would have taken this presentation last week when we were doing the one household, one hectare. So we did submit the policy framework as well as the presentation for circulation, but we will just check also again with the Secretariat. Honourable Mbabama, in terms of the top-down solution, are we absolutely certain that we have workshopped? I think let me deal with it on two levels. I'm saying we have had extensive consultation as a department with the agricultural sector itself in terms of organizations, farmers, commercial farmers, etc. And we've also been engaging with farm workers from a tenure perspective, not only on this, but as well as in terms of our other legislation as well. So at a district level, we have established now what is referred to as labor tenant stroke farm dweller forums, where we then further engage on all our policies as well as issues that are coming out from them. Whether or not it has been as extensive or fully covered, that is still work in progress. We cannot say 100%. And I think that's where Bong Nkosi, the acting DDG, when he was speaking, referred to the fact that even in the projects themselves, one of the areas that we have to pay careful attention to is the issue of facilitation with the farm workers on each and every project, as we engage before we structure the transaction themselves. And that's where we're trying to put a lot of effort at the moment. But we have been consulting on all our policy initiatives as we have been moving forward. In terms of the land use certificates, I think we'll answer now. Honorable Nchabeleng, in terms of the issues of how does this type of model work with, for example, the restitution or restituted farms at the moment, remember that restitution, the land is transferred or restored in full title to the claimant community, all right? In that case, they can agree to partner or enter into a partnership with private sector or a strategic partner as that community, because they own full title anyway, and they're able to do that. And that happens all the time. It doesn't happen through this policy. This policy is about strengthening of relative rights of people living and working on farms. So it's really targeting farm workers, farm occupiers, in terms of the model that is being presented today. But restitution then continues to operate with strategic partners if they want to engage in big business. And that happens all over. I mean, we have sent several large claims that have been settled where they've partnered then with previous companies who were owning those properties as well. And it will continue to happen. In terms of the issue you raise around the sharecroppers, that's within the labor tenant program. And remember, again, within the labor tenants program, we're dealing again with a rights-based legislation, and we are then, in that instance, transferring land to labor tenants in terms of the Labor Tenant Act. But again, in terms of that, if they want to engage with a model with the previous owners or even bring in private sector partners, the department then can assist them in doing that. But this particular model now is a little bit different because the underlying land is land that is purchased and held by the state, and then the farm occupiers and the current farm owners come together in a partnership on that very same property. Chairperson, in terms of the issues of monitoring and evaluation, do we have the capacity, as indicated, ourselves, because of the technical capabilities that are needed in terms of these type of transactions, we have been using and have built in within our SLA with the NEF at the moment to assist us with the monitoring and evaluation aspects of these business transactions. But again, within the expertise of the department going forward, we are also adding some of those functions to our component. Can I hand over to the ADDG to just deal with the additional questions?
Honorable Chair, I think mine is just to talk about the land use rights certificates. That is the current model that is being proposed in the policy framework. The land use rights certificate will also be registered at the deeds office through a notarial deed. It does, in a certain extent, to be honest, it does, in a certain extent, give security of tenure to the farm dwellers and farm workers, because they use that land use rights certificate to enter into the business transaction. This land use rights certificate is specifically allocated because the land currently in the pilots is owned by the state 100%. Then the new co leases the land from the state. And then we are saying, if the new co leases the land from the state, the new co consists of the previously advantaged and the previously disadvantaged persons. What is it that will therefore ensure security of tenure for the farm workers separate from new co? Then the discussion was that the deeds office came up with this proposal to say we can give them, on top of the, as an annexure to, as a condition to the lease, give the farm workers and farm dealers the land use rights certificate for residential and also for the production land. Because some of them, they are residing on the farm, which will sort out through the social facilitation issue on the improvement of their livelihoods separately from the productive land, where they will have shares. They still have shares on the side, but at the same time, they've got residential rights on the farm, which you want to secure. The thing was, we cannot put a lease agreement on top of another lease agreement. That was the advice from the attorneys from the deeds office, and in terms of the deeds registry act, they cannot be able to register both, because obviously the lease is going to be more than 10 years. So if you talk about more than 10 years, we've got to register if it is 9 years, 11 months, it has to be registered on a title deed. So that was the reason. But in a certain extent it does, but we still have discussions in terms of do they really, the land use rights certificate, give full security of tenure to these persons under the circumstances. Because the proposal in terms of the policy is that at some point, the state will have to transfer this land to the farm workers' legal entity, whether it is a trust or what, but in full title to the legal entity of the farm workers, while they pursue the same, moving away from a leasehold or land use rights certificate, but the full title to the farm workers in the near future. This is only happens where the land is 100%. Remember, when I was presenting, there are two scenarios. The first one, state 100%. The second one is where the land will be co-owned between the former land owner and the farm workers, which is a different scenario altogether. That is why we are saying a different type of a title deed will be created, which will then indicate the co-ownership of this particular piece of land for the implementation of the program, which the deeds office currently they are working on that particular issue. It means then, even if then, and in that instance, they will obviously, in terms of security of tenure, they will be title deed to secure their tenure rather than a land use rights certificate. It's not just across the board. Those are the options. Currently, it's just that since the pilot to date, the land has been acquired 100% owned by the state and leased to the new company. The criteria on the selection of farms, Honorable Filtane, you remember when this was announced in the State of the Nation address, we were asked to have 50 pilots implemented by 2019. We had to start. So the minister then requested openly to all the commercial farmers to bring in proposals to the department. So that is how we got these proposals. But we then, after that, developed a criteria, a screening criteria for all of them. So that is why in my presentation there are those that were declined because they did not meet the criteria that we have developed as a department in terms of the screening of all of these proposals that we have. We had to screen them, assess them, and then prioritize those that are within the criteria. So that is how it happened. I think the acting DG has spoken to the policy. Currently, we have developed a policy framework to guide us in the implementation of all these pilots as a phase one. Now, we are busy as a department finalizing the entire comprehensive policy, taking into consideration the lessons we have learned in the pilots, and also the comments that the inputs that we're getting from the farmers themselves as we implement the program, so that we can come back to the portfolio committee and present that final policy to yourselves. The last one that I want to is I think the acting DG spoke about the monitoring and evaluation. We have agreed with the NEF right now on the implemented pilots to say there is a post-transaction support which include monitoring and evaluation, which does not necessarily focus on the social welfare of the farm workers and empowerment. It also deals with the issues of business, looking at how the business is run, how the business is doing to meet the objectives of the current policy. And on top of that, we are establishing a project management unit under our branch, which will be responsible for, which will attract the necessary skills and expertise, people with business skills, et cetera, who can help us to run, manage this program together with those agencies that we will be appointing. We are expanding the scope beyond NEF to other FDIs so that they can help us in the packaging and destructuring. In that combination, the package is that they must come with the legal aspects so that we can address what Honorable Waters has asked in terms of the legal aspects, in terms of the people with the company law aspects, so that they can help us in structuring all of these deals, because we're dealing with serious businesses in the area of grapes, in the area of citrus, etc. So there are international agreements that are there. So we need those kind of persons to help us in structuring all of those. I think those are the Honorable Chair, if you may allow me. I think I have covered some of the things that were not covered. Thank you.
Very much. I didn't hear any response with regards to why obligatory trust. Then also, Honorable Nchabeleng raised the issue of if the restituted land or beneficiaries wants to be part of the 50-50, how do you accommodate them? What is the difference between the 50-50 and the share cropping, and also the issue of the asset verification?
Sorry about that, Chair. The why workers trust the. The advice from the NEF legal team was that since we are establishing a new core where we will have farm workers jointly owning that business together with the former land owner, for now the only appropriate legal entity formation will be a trust for the workers, for now. But I think we can take that up and then get more legal advice on that to say, are there any other options rather than everything be a workers' trust for the farm workers? We will take that, Honorable Chair. I think the acting DG did respond to the restitution. The restitution program is land is rights-based. The land is transferred directly to them. And in this case, we are strengthening the relative rights of persons working and living on farms in terms of this 50-50. Whereas the restitution is the restoration of rights of persons who are dispossessed. So in other words, if you look at the four programs, the three programs of land reform, the 50-50, even though it contributes to land redistribution, but some elements of it, we are trying to deal with the issue of security of tenure in terms of the land tenure program. So it's more on the two programs, the other two programs, land tenure and land redistribution. And land restitution, even though it's land restitution, but the claimants, they still have an option to enter into an equity arrangement outside the land, equity arrangement, because the land would be privately owned by them as a CPO or whatever legal entity, but they can enter into a joint venture or equity arrangement with any investor who wants to invest in their farming business. That has been done in a number of restitution projects, which, in my view, most of those are the ones that are successful. I think the Honorable Chair will remember the one in Mpumalanga, the game, the Kruger National Park, when it was restored. There is an equity agreement between the claimants and the former owners of the park in terms of share equity arrangement. They define the shareholding on that one. It's not necessarily 50-50, but there is a shareholding arrangement between them. The sharecropping, we're implementing that in the main on when we settle labor tenants, because the labor tenants, they get full title as well. That is your second arm when we're dealing with labor tenants. As the claim, we have received certain applications under the land tenure program for the settlement of those labor tenant claims. That we also propose that sharecropping. It applies there. It's not necessarily the sharecropping is not necessarily an equity kind of a partnership, but it's about the sharing the cropping. If they want to plant maize on 400 hectares. The farmer will come and plant 200 hectares, and 200 hectares will be for the benefit of the farm workers and the farm dwellers or farm labor tenants, and they share the profit on both of them. So that's how the sharecropping has been done in terms of the labor tenant, the settlement of labor tenants. That is where it applies. It's not necessarily strengthening their relative rights, but it's because they own the land 100%. As a labor tenant, a legal entity, we transfer directly to them. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, the issue in terms of the assets that are there, remember that I think the issues, Honorable Ntshabeleng, is when before we can purchase, that the assets are then stripped off the land. That is the issue. So what we do now is if we value land and we value it fully with all the assets, in this case the NEF also assists the department, but we also then appoint proper valuers that will do that. But at the point of taking transfer of a property, we ensure that we check again and verify all assets on the property at that point in time of transfer and the condition that we had valued at, so that the business then can move forward. But one of the fundamental things, even in the strengthening of relative rights, as ADDG was presenting, you'll note is one of the first steps we do is to confirm that even with all the assets that were there, does that business now have what they need in order for them to move forward? And that is one of the first evaluations that we would do even as we engage with the business transaction. Thank you.
Honorable Filton.
Chair, I didn't pick up the response on the issue of the trusts. Thanks.
Issue of the trust.
Sorry.
I'm saying repeat yourself on that. You said you didn't hear the issue of the trust. They've responded to. They've said it's they got that legal advice that for now it will be better for this 50-50 for them to establish the trust, but they will also look at other legal advices as time goes on. Just can we just go back to maybe on your page 17 of the presentation? I just want to get clarity on a few issues here. You have mentioned the amount approved stroke dispersed. Then you have said approved transferred. What is it approved transferred? Is it land or whatever? Then you have put the approved date. But my first concern is that the consistency here. Because in other project name, we didn't put the approved amount and dispersed. Then in other projects, again, we didn't indicate the budget for the projects. For instance, the St. Olive Belt 61 and Stengold Bomb 43. There are no amounts there, just a clarity. Then on the other side, there's no page number, I think it's 18. There's Zirfontein. But when looking at the project names there, Zirfontein is not there. Then the other thing on the, when looking at Klein Monrefir, the budget there is 29.5 million. You have said transferred 16 September 2016. But looking at the activities, household profiling, none. Awareness creation, none. Trust registered, none. Corporate governance, none. Directors workshop, none. AJM held, none. Social plan, none. Market linkages, none. Just a clarity on that one. Also align it to the WOG land. When looking at page 17, WOG land 803, Worcester. You have said it's 400 hectares, 18 farm workers participating, 75.1 million transferred 10 March 2017. But there's none that has been done there again. Looking again at Burberry, it was transferred, when looking at page 17, Burberry, was transferred on the 2nd of February 2016, but looking at the activities, there was no household profiling, awareness creation, and trust registered, but no corporate governance, no director workshop, AGM, no social plan, no market linkages. Just a clarity on those ones. Honorable Mngoni.
Thank you, Chair. At some point, I'm going to ask for the skills profile of the department. Not because I have any skills, but because it may as well be that maybe we got a conglomeration of lawyers or otherwise. Chair, the basic starting point always is a reporting format. I have no problem with the narrative. We've done that in these years, and this is almost half a billion spent. But the reporting format, I know the other time the CFO, when on the same issue. The problem, Chair, it's very difficult to hold anyone accountable on the basis of a narrative. But the reporting format tells you, this is a sub-program of this, this is a program, these are the key KPIs, this is what not, what not. and we don't have that here. It makes engagement very difficult. Probably, Chair, at high echelons, no one has public administration background in terms of the academic. Probably that's the case. But I don't think that's a requirement. It's just that people must then be sensitive to the formats and systems and do everything. Every concept brought by the minister, you then go into your toolkit and you fit it accordingly. That's all we ask. And that's all you fail us all the time on. Look, Dr. Madlopa joined ITB long, long after most of you are in the department. But they're doing exactly that. They just report according to a clear format. That's the first frustration, Chair. It keeps me quiet for better part because probably if I was the auditor, it would just be a disclaimer from the word go because there's nothing to audit. All the documents are out of place, out of shape, out of everything. You know, that's the first one. The second one, Chair, is I think I picked up something that's saying, Mr. Zung, that's saying you've not yet adopted a policy document. I just want to be very, very clear on this. You mentioned it in passing. I wish you were very explicit in saying, have you or have you not adopted, Acting DG, a policy document on the FRR? Here is a policy document. A policy document signed by the minister, dated, blah, blah, blah. No, we don't have. We are still piloting. The period of piloting is this much. Now we don't know. So even in how you are reporting now, let me go to Honorable Fildane's issue about the model. Now, go back to your lawyers and say, the poor Mguni, not knowledgeable as he is, the disputes that the only form of an entity that you can create is a trust. Go back to your lawyers and say, we say that, or I say that, if my colleagues won't want to be bound by that. False. At small business next door, colleagues are sitting there calling for cooperatives and so on. You have got lumping together workers, but you cannot even think along the lines of cooperatives, and your lawyers say the only model is the trust, and you want us to believe that. Sorry, I'm out on bail. I do not believe. I don't believe your lawyers there. That's all of Fildane's question, but I don't believe your lawyers there. There could be, you see, elsewhere, Chair, at CPAs, we're sitting with another problem of trust. Now you come here and your lawyers say, no, trusts are the best model. We'll sit with the same problem on SRR firms, where we'll have to sit sometime down the line and say, all the trusts in SRR, either they're going away with monies or whatever. We've experienced as this committee, Chair, the problem of trust. But your lawyers are saying to you, trusts are the way to go. And you come and you tell us to believe that, sorry, some of us are non-believers in any other issue that needs belief anyway, you know. So the issue about the trust raised by Oral Fildane, I'm taking it to another level, Chair, to say I'm not convinced that the only tool at the disposal of the department and workers was the thing. Chair, let me go to the page 17. You nicely camped there, Chair. I was already nicely camped there as well. Is this one, Chair? Nagoya, is this one? Because I heard you reading some stats from page 17, Chair. There's no stats here, but it's a good one. The color, I guess, is even best. Ne? Yeah, I'm on a black and white one. These boxes with the XXXX, in the absence of a performance document, outline document, one can settle, Chair, with this. This is very dismal. $500 million has been spent over a period of 2.5 to 3 years, and so much has not been done. Very few ticks, Chair. Very few ticks, and shall I say 90% no. Acting DG, this is bad in my notebook. I don't know in yours. This is very bad. But leave everything else even in that page. Go to, I don't know where social facilitation is. I did read about it somewhere. It's okay. Now let's go to creating awareness. Let's just take that creating awareness on the same page.
the third column going down.
You know, Chair, what it means in my, subject to the response of the department, in my analytical tools, creating awareness is so bad there. I guess it's at about 60% failure rate. I see about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 ticks and equal number of X's there. If you have not created awareness, please dispute my statement. All it means, you can march to those farms and would find those workers not aware that they are now owners via a government funding, blah, 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 blah. Now, Chair, in the history of this governance in 23 years, you would go to projects funded by government entities, both at municipality, at province, and I think here at national. You would find that in a project funded on behalf of the people don't know that this bakery is theirs. They're still working for the wages from who somebody they see as the owner of the bakery or piggery or whatever, you know, project. So we are in that situation here with half a billion rands. We are in a situation where the people are not aware that they are the owners. Once facilitation fails, Chair, I did hear you whispering somewhere yesterday that we'll have to visit some of these SRR farms. Clearly, we'll meet with people, and to your great embarrassment, DG and Mr. Zoom, to your great embarrassment, we'll meet people who will not be aware that they own it along what modalities. Look at, is that corporate governance or what? AGMs held. Third from the right. Only one AGM has been held. So here is half a billion rand spent on people who have not even organized themselves into a meeting to elect their representatives. If there's another acronym that is equivalent to AGM, please show me, point me to it. So only one AGM was held at Samstan. This chair being vigilant enough may even suggest that if Samstan is somewhere in the Western Cape, we even drive our own cars one Wednesday or Friday. We go there just to see, just to confirm what you are saying, that the AGM was held there at Samstan. Maybe even that AGM may not have been the AGM as we would envisage. You see, these failures, they help elsewhere to create the story that there's kleptocracy, there's that even notion. There's governance here, there's parliament here, there's all of us hard at work, and sometimes when you do not perform to the best, then one can really smell a rat, Chair. So, Chair, I am frustrated. I sat here and I kept quiet. I felt, let me say nothing, but I felt, let me just raise some of the issues, and I think they're very pertinent, and it is frustrating. The SRR as it stands, the five that were turned back, Chair, the five that were not passed, what were the reasons in each case? Even if we run out of time, I'll ask to get direct response to this. There were five farms that could not. What were the reasons? I think, Chair, my last question, Honorable Mbabama raised the issue about social facilitation. I don't know, maybe she raised a related one, but I think I had her gravitating towards that. Maybe there was a response, but please clearly state to us, was there social facilitation done overarching and proper than per project? Can we get that one of the overarching? It's linked to the concept document. That's what I was forgetting. Where is the concept document of the SRR? Just the concept document. This is what we seek to do. This is how we seek to roll it out and all that. Just a concept document. A concept document. Do we have that? That's the chair.
Honorable Chairman.
Yeah, Chairperson, I'm looking at visit 15 and 17. There's in the Eastern Cape, approved farms, claim, wondering whatever I fear. It has four workers. They are given R29 million is transferred, and this project started on the, it was transferred on the 15th of September, 2015. That is on page 16. When you go to page 17, same project, Clean Montrefil, nothing has happened here. Social plan, yeah, they are all zeros, in fact. Are these excess zeros, or do they mean that it's done? The excess and the rise. The excess means next, and the right means it's done. So you have transferred 29 million rand to four people in the Eastern Cape. Those people don't have any awareness, the trust is not registered, corporate governance, next workshop, next AGM for call, oh, sorry, next social plan, kuhava. And what is this last one? Yeah, now that's next. So, I mean, what happened to the 29 million rand? It was given in September 2016. And this is 2017, and we're getting this report today. I find it difficult to understand this thing, Chairperson. And with this kind of format, that makes it difficult to follow things quickly. It's even worse. There could be more of this Montrefil, whatever, claim Montrefil or whatever. If we could get, what is happening.
I mean, the last one. The financial allocation, when looking at Clean Modem and also Beeberry, Clean Modem has got 560 hectares, Beeberry has got 632, farm workers at Clean Modem, there are four, at Beeberry there are 29, but the allocation for Clean Modem, where there are four farm workers, it's more than the allocation for the Beeberry, where there are 29 workers and also more hectares. Just criteria for financial allocation. Maybe we look at these figures, but there are other factors that are being considered before you allocate funds, just to get an idea. The criteria for financial allocation, and also to check whether are you still piloting or you are rolling over this program, because there are certain funds that were transferred as at June 2015. For instance, the Oldland, Diamond, Calput, Clipan, and yeah, those three allocation, the transference was in June 2015. But also looking at other progress on social facilitation, for instance, when looking at Maruling, June 2015, household profiling was not done, corporate governance, director's workshop, AGM none, social plan none, and also the market, the market linkage has been done. When looking at Calput and Clipan, they are not here now, they are not on the 17th page on progress on social facilitation. Means that their story ended up in page 17, because there's nothing in page 18 about their progress. Acting teacher?
Just before the chair. Sorry, I forgot to switch this thing. I think this report is incomplete. My neck tells me that, because I see this Clean Montrefil, it appears on 15. 16 and 17, and the others do not appear. You don't know whether they went through facilitation and all that. There are these projects that appear on page 16, and and suddenly they disappear on page 17. You can, it's only few that appear on 16 and 17. What about the rest? Oh, there's 18. No, 18 is no. I don't know if we have the same document, but there are only two pages of project.
Honorable members, honorable members, listening to what honorable members are raising, can I make a proposal that we give the department a chance to go and beef up this report? It's incomplete, as members are saying, and also really we're not happy about the performance on social facilitation. While there's Mr. Zulu, while the allocation, the acting DG, there's an allocation, but looking at the progress on social facilitation, most of the things has not yet been done. Can you go and make sure that the performance is aligned to the allocation? And also to make sure that some of the deliveries of the SRR programs, some of the project names appearing in 17, they are not appearing in the next page, which is not numbered according to the report that I'm having. But I think it's 18, where it's written progress on social facilitation. So we are not happy about the progress, especially on the transfer done from as at 2015. The information is incomplete, but also to request our support staff that we'll be having a program of public hearings in different provinces. Can you check where we'll be going for public hearings and check where are these SRR programs, so that when we go for public hearings, that at least we hit two beds with one stone. If our public hearing starts at 10, from 10 to 1, public hearings, from 2 till late, we visit those projects, SRR projects around those areas. Can you also present that draft program to this committee when you are ready, but in the next, we're only left with two weeks. If you can do that next week, then you will just circulate the draft to members, but make sure that when doing public hearings, we visit some of this, you identify this SRR project so that we visit them. As part of our oversight, so that we can be able to get the successes and also the challenges and come back and engage the department, because our intention is not just to critique you, but you must critique and assist you based on the information that you'll be gathering on the ground. So that, because our intention, all of us here, our intention is to make sure that we deliver quality services to our people. If we allocate resources to you, let the resources be used effectively, efficiently, and economically for the benefit of the South African citizens. Because we can't keep on critiquing while we don't even assist you coming with the proposals. But we hope that after the oversight visits that you'll be doing, we'll be able to have information on how best can you improve on what you are doing? Is my proposal accepted? Honorable Chabeleng?
Now, see, the more I look at this thing, the more I get more confused, actually. There are other projects like Stay Away, Farms in the North.
That is why I've made a proposal.
Oh,
I'm sorry to disturb
okay.
you. That is why I've made
oh,
a proposal.
Oh.
Yes, because otherwise we'll keep on asking the questions on the report, you know. So I've made that proposal, hoping that that proposal will assist us to get what we want. I've made that proposal. Any seconder?
Chair, thank you very much for the clarity of thought you've tabled on how we can take a situation forward. But also clarifying the department that the whole idea is to get everything right. You know, we can't really call people here to condemn them. You know, so the idea is what is happening, how best. There's half a billion you've spent now in 36 months almost, and we think that you could have done better. Start by going to sort out the paperwork or report in a fair manner. Please be fair to us, and but then share straight to your point. Let's support that during the public hearings we also visit these farms, and it would be fair for Mr. Zungu to develop as a priority. Social facilitation always goes ahead. Always goes ahead. So the people know that government has done this for us. Do we now own? At least even just that story. Just that story. You could do it in 3 weeks. There's a handful of farms here. You could do it in 3 weeks. People would be knowing that they own this. Then the contradictions would emerge. That would take us forward anyway. They say, oh, we own it. But how come the bus is still living alone in the house? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we just look at our minutes for the 7th of June? Page 1 of the minutes. Minutes were circulated earlier to members. Page 2 of the minutes. Page 3 of the minutes. If there's none, can I then get a mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 7th of June 2017? Honorable Fulton, are you raising your hand? Or are you tired? Honorable Chair. Honorable Fulton.
I propose the acceptance of the minutes, adoption of the minutes.
Minutes, any seconder? Honorable Chabeleng seconds. Honorable members. Thank you very much, honorable members, acting DG. Thank you very much. I think we have noted what we want, and also thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.